Welcome to this sermon from Christ Church. Have your Bible ready, and let's begin.
Look at us and condemn us for making messes, but you come and you help us, and you lead us out of them. Father, I pray this morning that we could experience the blessing of your goodness, the blessing of your leadership, the blessing of your wisdom in our lives. And I pray, Father, that we could see how great you are to turn things that maybe others meant for evil or we did foolishly, and you can turn them and you can use them for good. And I pray, Lord, we could see that in our own lives, and our trust and our hope in you would go up. And I ask this in Jesus' name, amen. Well, good morning, church. It's good to be with you. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving. Ate a lot of food. Two of you did. That's good. We had a good Thanksgiving. I ate a ton, but it was a good time. And man, that was a beatdown yesterday. I didn't want to say anything because, you know, I know there's some Michigan fans in our church, and we're praying for you, pleading with God for you. And I don't want to rub it in, but man, that was a beatdown. The Lord's team won, so that was good. And if you want counseling and prayer after service, come up. We'll pray the scarlet and gray right into your soul. Well, today I'm going to do a standalone sermon on Bless This Mess. And then next week, we are going to start a new sermon series called All I Want for Christmas is Less Stress. Doesn't that sound like a good gift? Less stress. And God has a lot to say about that topic. So we're going to open up our minds and our hearts to God's voice and God's wisdom on that issue, because I think one of the biggest issues in our world and our culture today is just anxiety and stress and the frustration and the debilitation that comes with all that. So we're going to talk a lot about that. Christmas Eve, 5 o'clock, going to be in here. It's going to be a great time. And that's kind of how we're going to finish out the year. But today I want to talk about this idea of bless this mess. I'm really good at making messes. Anybody feel like they excel at that? Is my mom here? Am I good at making a mess? Can you amen me, or gonna leave me hanging? I'm really good at it, and I don't know if you've created messes in your life, and then sometimes you're like, man, I don't know if I can undo this, and it's a very unsettling feeling. This actually happened to me recently during Thanksgiving. We were at my in-laws, and we were trying to get one of their coffee maker on the Wi-Fi. You know, because everything's on Wi-Fi these days. And we're trying to make it work. And sometimes I feel like I'm Steve Jobs or something. You know, I overestimate my tech ability. And so we couldn't do it. So I was like, well, let's reset the router. Just seemed like a good idea. Something's not working, just hit reset. But then what happened is it reset everything in their house. TV, speakers, garage door opener. So for the next 5 hours, had to figure out how to get everything. It didn't take quite that long, but it felt like it. It kind of felt like that. Remember Y2K? The world's going to end because computers don't know the year 2000. That's what it felt like. Just everything went black, and then thinking, man, Terminator's going to come true here. We're going to have to fight robots. But it was a mess I wasn't sure I could get out of. Now, that's a small one, but today I want to talk about the bigger messes that sometimes we create in our lives. Because I think what happens is sometimes when we make a mess, we look at it and it feels so big and so overwhelming that we declare that it cannot be cleaned up and it cannot be fixed. And what happens is then we begin to lose hope. And when you lose hope, it's one of the most dangerous times in your life. When you lose hope, you are a danger to yourself, but you're also a danger to the people around you, because people without hope make different decisions and bad decisions. But people with hope respond and act far differently in this world. And sometimes it's easy to look at life and And it's easy to feel like we've made messes that are irredeemable. Do you ever look back at certain seasons in your life, certain times, and you're like, I wish I knew everything I know now, and I could bring that into that season. But now you're like, I kind of made a mess of it. And it's gone now. And it feels like that's just over, it's done, it's wasted. Maybe some of us, we feel like we made a mess of maybe early adulthood, and now we're kind of in the wrong career. We miss what we should have done with our life, but it's too hard to go back. It's like, man, it's a mess. Now I'm just frustrated. I don't know what to do. Maybe we feel like there have been key relationships in our life that we've made a mess of. We didn't respond the way we should have, or we neglected that relationship, and now it feels like it's a mess now, and we don't know how to clean it up. Anybody feel that way? Or maybe we feel like we made a mess of our marriage, and just years that have gone by, and we've ruined that relationship. Maybe some of us feel like we've ruined our kids. Chet, man, I didn't do enough of this. I didn't do enough of that. I did too much of this. And it feels like it's ruined now. This is part of being a human being, is that we do make messes. And as we experience them, it can feel so overwhelming and so hopeless, and we can be lost in how to figure out our way out of the mess. But I have good news for you today, that God can still bless us in our mess. And I want to fill you with hope today. And whatever maybe you feel like the biggest mess is in your life and my life, I want us just to ask this question: what if God could still bless us in that mess? Would you want to hear about that? What if God could still find a way to lead us out of that, and maybe to use that mess for our ultimate good, and to turn some situations around? Because I think God excels at leading people out of messes, and taking a mess and actually making something beautiful out of it. And that's what I want to talk to you about today. And we're going to look at a story. It's a very ancient story. It's in the book of Genesis. I'm missing my text. Can you start me on the verses if they're there? We're going to start there. Thank you. So this is the story. Abram had been living in Canaan 10 years. And Sarai, his wife, and I'm just going to call them Abraham and Sarah. I know it says Abram and Sarai. God changes their name. We don't have time to talk about all that. So Abraham and Sarah, his wife, he took her Egyptian slave Hagar and gave her to her husband to be his wife. This is a weird situation. Did you just hear what I read? Abraham and Sarah were hoping to have a child. They couldn't have it. So Sarah gave Hagar to her husband to be his wife. He slept with Hagar, and she conceived. And when she knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. And this is where the mess begins. And what this story is about, if I could give you the context of it, this story is so messy because Abraham had a tremendous call from God on his life. And we're kind of picking up right in the middle of the story. But when God came into Abraham's life, God came in and he said to Abraham, he said, I am going to bless the world through you. Everything that's messed up and broken in this world, I am going to change it through you. That's a pretty tremendous calling, don't you think? And he said, and it's not just going to be through you, but it's going to be through your family and your descendants. It's going to be sort of this legacy blessing. And Abraham was humbled by that. He was privileged by that. He was overwhelmed by it, but he was also confused by it. Because Abraham was an old man. And his wife was an old woman. And they had not had kids up to this point. And from all their understanding that it wasn't going to happen. They were infertile. It had been so long. There's no way it was going to happen now in old age. But God said it would. And so it was kind of this confusing experience to be in. And so after God initially said that, he showed up to him many times in very real and literal and powerful ways to just confirm this promise. And 11 years went by and still no child and no promise. And could you understand Abraham's confusion at that? I mean, God shows up, he says these things to me, but yet my experience is this isn't happening. And so Abraham began to struggle to believe God was going to fulfill his word. And I just want to point out today that every mess in our life begins with a distrust in God. That's where it all begins. Abraham got to this point. It's 11 years. And so he says, all right, I guess God's not going to do this, so I have to take it into my own hands. And anytime you try to play God in your life, you will make a mess. Because I'm here to tell you this morning, you are not God. And neither am I. And trying to play God is a very dangerous thing. And I think one of the things that perpetuates messes in our life is that we try to control so much of our life. And when we feel like God isn't moving like he should, or God isn't doing what we want him to do, we feel a sense that we have to step in and try to figure it out ourselves. And this is exactly what Abraham did. And it began this mess that he finds himself in. Because I believe at the end of the day, most of our struggles with God are not intellectual. Most people don't disbelieve in God for intellectual reasons. It's actually personal. And most of us, we struggle because we want a God that we can control. We want a God that we can say, jump, and he says, how high? We want a God that we can say, answer this prayer now. It's super important to me. What are you doing? Why are you waiting? And I think our real struggle comes from that place. You with me on this, church? And this is Abraham's struggle. And this is the thing that ultimately creates a mess in our life. All right. Can you get me back to the beginning? We'll get there. Cool. Thank you. So he had a tremendous experience with God. He struggled to believe. This is our greatest struggle and brokenness. And that's what it's rooted in. It's wanting to control the actions, timings, and plan of God. And one of the hardest things about being in a relationship with God is that he's in charge and we're not. God shows up to Abraham. He says, hey, you're going to do it. And Abraham's like, it's been 11 years. What are you waiting for? I'm not getting any younger. And that's the frustration that he's living in. But what I want to say, just to encourage you, is that one of the beautiful things about God is he doesn't count against us all the times we don't believe in him. But he is looking for the one time that we actually do. This is what's amazing. This just jumps out to me when I read the story of Abraham, because the New Testament writers who would read the story of Abraham thousands of years later, they would look at his life and they would call him a great man of faith. But when I read his story, I don't feel the same way. I see a guy who's trying to figure it out on his own. I see a guy who's questioning what God is doing all the time. But see, they were using a different standard. They weren't looking at all the times he didn't believe, but the few times he did. And any great change in our life begins with one small moment of trust in God. No matter how small it is, even if it is the tiniest seed of trust, that's the beginning of real transformation in our life. You with me on this, church? And we see that through the story of Abraham. And when I think I have to play God in my life, I will create a mess. So here's the mess. So they decide that they're going to have a kid with Hagar. Sarah is Abraham's wife. Hagar is her servant. So they put this plan together. Hey, you have a kid with her. She'll be kind of a second-tier wife. We'll raise the kid as our own. And then God's going to fulfill this promise through them. And so the plan went on. But as she got pregnant, some jealousy and nastiness began to develop. Hagar started getting a little bit proud and arrogant about it and making an issue of it with Sarah. Sarah didn't like it. So Sarah said to Abraham, "You are responsible for the wrong I am suffering. I put my slave in your arms." This was a great plan, Abraham. "What's wrong with you? Now that she knows she's pregnant, she despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me." I love how now she brings God into it. And let God, you know, now she gets on her spiritual high horse. It's a mess. "Your slave is in your hands." Abraham, the great problem solver and leader that he is, says, "That's your problem. Do with her what you want. She's your slave. Do whatever you think's best." Then Sarah mistreated Hagar, and so she fled from her. Here's the big shocker. The love triangle didn't work. Whoa, nobody saw that one coming. It didn't work. Sometimes people say, "Well, doesn't the Bible, you know, isn't it like pro-polygamy?" And I'm always like, "Have you ever read it?" It definitely isn't. It always shows this is a terrible idea. It doesn't work, right? One man and one woman, that's hard enough. Yeah, that's what I was waiting for. You introduce a few other people, it's game over. And that's what happens. The love triangle, it didn't work. It was a total mess. So now you have Sarah and Abraham at odds with each other. You have Sarah at odds with Hagar. You have Abraham being an idiot and totally passive. You have a pregnant woman who's getting abused and now flees away. Church, this is a Jerry Springer show. This is a disaster. It's a mess. Is there any way out of it? And I think one of the challenges about messes, and one of the things that makes them so hard, is it feels like such a loss, because when you really enter into one, and especially if you create it. See, I feel for Hagar in this story, don't you? I mean, this mess was really Abraham and Sarah's mess, and it spilled over into her and became her mess, right? And sometimes that happens in life. Because if you don't deal with your mess, you're going to spill it over into someone else's life, right? And this is what happens with Abraham and Sarah. And then sometimes we're Abraham and Sarah, and we're the ones creating the mess. But either way, whether you create it or you're the victim of it, either way, there is a sense of loss that how I thought my life would go is not how it's going to go. And that's hard, isn't it? There's a sense that plan A is out the window. Have you ever just took a step back from your life and you looked what was happening and you're like, "This is not what I thought. This is not what I hoped for. This is not how I thought it would end up." And if we're not careful, we can be so devastated by that we just will spend so much time and energy in regret. Right? This was not plan A. Plan A was Abraham and Sarah. They're going to have a kid. God's going to bless them. God's going to do this great thing. But guess what? Plan A is gone now. Now we're in plan B. Now we got Abraham, Sarah, and Hagar. And we have Abraham and Hagar's kid. And when plan A fails, sometimes we're tempted to believe that its blessings are gone forever. When you're in a mess, sometimes it's so easy to look at that mess and say, "The thing that I was hoping for, The thing that I want in my life, it's gone forever. And we lose hope. And we lose drive. And we lose heart. And we lose faith. And we begin to struggle in an even deeper way. But here's the good news today. There is no plan A. We're all on plan B. Part of being a human being means that none of us bat 100%. Not one of us. Not one of us can have done and made every choice that we may need to make. And so sometimes when you're in a mess, one of the best things you can do is stop focusing on the loss of plan A and begin to seek how God might lead you in plan B. You with me on this? Plan A is gone. And plan A is ultimately not a reality for any of us. Plan A is a myth because the world is a broken place and we're broken people and things don't always go the way that they should. But it doesn't mean that the blessing that we long for can't be found in plan B. You with me on this? Because we're going to see God at work in this situation. So don't mourn plan A, but instead focus on what God could do in plan B. And let's see how this story ends. So Hagar has now run off, and the angel of the Lord found Hagar. She ran off. And sometimes when you're in a mess, that's the most tempting thing to do, is just to run from it. You ever done that? Just try to run from your problems, run from the issues, run from the thing that's driving you crazy. Isn't it amazing how you can never beat it, though? I was just talking to a young lady at her church, and she just graduated college, and she was telling me about some of her friends, and she said, you know, they all think they can move, and if they move to a new city, their problems will be gone. You know how that works, though, right? Wherever you go, there you are. And if those problems, you think they stayed home, guess what? You brought them with you. Or you'll create them afresh. But either way, they'll be there. And I think in our world, we don't just run geographically, but we can run by just numbing ourselves to life. Sometimes we run by just kind of losing all our expectation because we're so sick of being disappointed. And so now anything we go into, we go in just completely flat in our heart and mind because we're self-protecting. And we're afraid of the frustration of the disappointment and the mess. And ultimately, church, what we're doing is we're running like Hagar. And that never solves our problems. Running feels good temporarily. But guess what? In the long haul, it enslaves you. But Hagar runs, but God finds her. The Lord found her near a spring in the desert. It was the spring that's beside the road to Shur. And he said, Hagar, slave of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going? I like that. Let's talk about your past and let's talk about your future. I'm running away from my mistress, Sarai. She answered, Sarah. Then the angel of the Lord told her, go back to your mistress and submit to her. What? That crazy lady? Oh, Sarai? No thanks. I'm getting away from her. I'm running for my life. The angel says, go back. The angel added, I will increase your descendants so much that they will be too numerous to count. So listen to my voice, for you will find God's blessing in it. Now, in the ancient world, this would be one of the best blessings you could ever be given. Because in the ancient world, the size of your family, the number of your descendants, that was one of the most important things and one of the most sought after things. The Duggar family would have done very well in the ancient world, and people would have loved them because that was a big deal. And so she's saying, man, God's blessings will be yours even in this mess. But go back to Sarai. Then it said, she gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her. You are the God who sees me. For she said, I have seen the one who sees me. And that's how the story ends. And then if you read on through the book of Genesis, you see God does that. From Hagar's son, God raises up many great nations. But God also gives Sarah and Abraham a son as well. And we see that even though there was terrible decisions made here, even though there was incredibly hurtful and abusive and exploiting type of behavior, God still, in his grace, met these people and blessed them. And I love how Hagar wraps it up. She says, I get it now. You are the God who sees me. And I also see you. See, one of the best things that can happen in our mess is that we realize God sees the mess. He sees the struggle of your heart. He sees the weight you carry every day. He sees and he cares. Haven't you noticed in life that sometimes the greatest thing someone can do for us is just acknowledge the struggle that we're in? And it's so frustrating sometimes when you feel like you are doing your best and no one acknowledges it. But when you are trying your hardest and you're doing the best you can with what you have in front of you, and someone just says, hey, I see what you're doing. I see you trying. I know how hard that must be for you. Doesn't that acknowledgement just ultimately make it a little bit easier? Just someone seeing and knowing and understanding and sympathizing. And this is what Hagar feels from God. You see me. You see the wrongs. You see the abuse. You see the stupidity of Abraham and Sarah. You see the mistreatment. You see all this. You acknowledge it and you care. And she says, and now I see you. I see that you're not going to leave me in this mess to figure it out myself. I see that you're going to guide me through it. I see that you're going to bless me through it. I see that the way they've wronged me, you're going to find a way to bless me and help me through this mess. And church, I want you to know today that you have a God who sees your mess. But I wonder if you can see him in your mess. Today, God sees, he cares, he's at work. And do we trust that just like he sees us, we can see him? So let me give you three quick ideas. What do we do in the mess? What do we do? Number one, just do what Hagar did. Obey the voice of God, no matter how counterintuitive it might seem. In your mess, the worst thing you can do is keep trying to figure it out yourself. That was Abraham and Sarah's problem.
Hey, I got an idea. You know Hagar?
Don't try to figure it out yourself. Many times figuring out ourselves is what got us where we are. We suck at being God of our own life. We're terrible at it because we're not meant to be it. But you have a great God who's really good at it. So let God be God and you be you. Quit trying to make decisions that are above your pay grade. Quit trying to determine things that are God's things to determine. And instead make your business hearing his voice and doing what he says. Obey the voice of the Lord. And many times God's call in our life is counterintuitive. Forgive that person. No. Don't want to. Hate him. Hate him, hate him, hate him. Root for Michigan. No, the Lord would never say that. Root for Pittsburgh. Never, never. Anyway, you get the idea. It's many times counterintuitive, but obey the voice of the Lord. Hagar, go back. Don't run from this issue. I've got you. I'll lead you through this. Listen to what I have to say. Obey the voice of the Lord. Here's the second thing. Rejoice that God sees and acknowledges our mess. You're not alone today. Your mess, you might be like, Chet, that's a bad mess. my mess is worse. Here's what I know. It's not greater than God. It's not greater than God. Your ability to mess up is not greater than God's ability to clean up. Your ability to destroy things is not greater than God's ability to heal things. Right? Your ability to make poor decisions is not as great as God's ability to turn those decisions into something good. And so today, there is hope. There is hope. We don't have to live in despair. We don't have to live in regret. We don't have to just live in this life numb because we think we've messed it all up. God sees. He cares. And he'll work. And lastly, we can replace that fear and regret with faith and hope. God sees you, but this morning, do you see him? He sees. He's with you. Will you trust that? Will you let him work? Will you open your heart? Will you let him guide you? Because there is no one more committed to cleaning your mess and my mess, to leading us through our mess, than the God that we have. I read an article this week about a little town in Italy called Bovina, and for $1, you can buy a house there. $1. If anyone wants to go, partners, 2 quarters. And I'll put up the other 2 and we'll be cultured people. $1. Now, it's a really beautiful, picturesque town. It's in Sicily. There's mountains and beautiful fields. But you know, if it's $1, there's got to be a catch to it, right? Well, here's what the catch is. The houses were built in the Middle Ages. And when you purchase it, you also have to agree to restore it. So if you think about a house built in the 1600s and what that would take to restore it today, it's going to cost you more than $1, I think. So you're purchasing a huge mess, but only for $1. And if you want to buy that mess, it costs you $1, but in the long run, it will cost you a lot more. And when I was thinking about that, it reminded me that when God looked at us, he purchased our mess. When Jesus Christ went to the cross, he went to the cross to forever fix the greatest mess in our life. That's the mess of being far from God. That's the mess of our sin. That's the mess of our failures. That's the mess of our alienation. And Christ went to the cross to fix that mess forever. And he did. But you know what's amazing? It didn't cost God $1 to do that. It cost him his own son. The broken body and the spilled blood of his son. But what that means for you and me is that God is so committed to helping us through our mess that he is never going to give up on that. If you commit $1 to a rehab project, you might get out pretty early on. I only put $1 down. What's the big deal? But when God puts his only son for us, for this project, he is never going to give up on that. He who began a good work in you and in me will see it unto completion. You have a God that will never leave you. He will never fail you. He will never forsake you. He is all in today. And can we let him lead us through our mess? Today, we're going to finish our sermon today by just taking a moment, and we're going to celebrate the Lord's Supper. And our practice is that we just kind of kneel where we're at, and we recommit ourselves to the leadership and the lordship of Christ. So if you're willing and able, I invite you to do that now.